How you doing? It's your boy Jonathan Macri with you for another episode of NBA Takedown, coming at you a little bit later than usual here on Monday afternoon. Thanks to my daughter's daycare for having their Thanksgiving family gathering at 12:30 p.m. today, which if I would have missed that, I would have been able to do the show, but I would have no home to come back to the next time I left, because my wife would have locked me out because I'd be divorced. Who knows about those problems? Who should I introduce first? Sean, how you doing, buddy?
I
can't speak.
As a father,
yes,
and a husband, yes, I understand there's certain things that if you do not do, the locks may be changed. So listen, you did what you had to do.
We do what we have to do as men of a certain age, because that's what we are. Jeff, Jay, how you doing, my man?
Good. I'd say it's not even men of a certain age, but men of a certain station. You have a station that you arm and that you occupy. So you have to carry out the mission, you know, and if the mission fails, that might have consequences that you're not trying to see.
Do you need, so it's like, is it like a video game? Like you need to pass one station and to get to the next station? Is that what we're doing here?
I think the minute you say I do, you are in the station, whether you like to, whether you are aware or not. And then from there you get to the multiple levels.
I'm still waiting to see what those multiple levels are. I feel like I'm still in the same station. Okay, so we have a shorter episode than usual. Again, blame me being a parent. So let's get right to it. So we are going to debut something new on this. We're going to do this every Monday from here on in, because we have our own little NBA Takedown chat that we're constantly texting in throughout the weekend with various thoughts about all the games. And the NBA games have been like off the chain. Like this past week of NBA basketball has been probably, I forget what night last week after we had that crazy night with all those end of game situations. But like this week was probably the best week of NBA basketball I could remember. So what better time to debut the Takeoff, where the three of us are each going to spout one take. There is no temperature check on this take, although it is implied that if you are a host of the show, it will be, there will not be ice floating in the water of your take. We're each going to have one take from our basketball watching over the weekend. I'm happy to go first unless someone is like chomping at the bit.
Nah, please.
Floor is yours.
Floor is mine. Okay. So my takeaway from this weekend, and this is a little bit of a cheat because this is somewhat influenced by a game that I watched last week when my beloved New York Knicks played the Orlando Magic. But my take is that the Orlando Magic are a team on the rise. They are coming. I know they lost last night. We could talk about that game last night. It was a great game. I'm sorry to steal your thunder here, Sean, but I'm going to go with it anyway. It is because they do not have Paolo Banchero currently healthy and available to play basketball. So, Sean, with that as my take, I'm going to turn to you. Any thoughts?
I'll say this. When the Knicks were playing the Magic last Wednesday night, yep, and when Paolo went out of the game, I did two things. One, I bet Knicks money line. And then I said to my, the other thing was I said to myself, self, wouldn't it be hilarious if the Orlando Magic win this game without him? And that's exactly what they did. So that's all that Stone Cold has to say about that.
Not only did they win the game without him, they won the game going away. And I know that it was somewhat of a game in the fourth quarter. But if you look at the Magic starting lineup now, I should say a couple things. I think it's a Paolo thing. And I also, the other part of my take is I think it's kind of a Jalen Suggs thing. And maybe what the take should have been is that it is because both Paolo and Jalen Suggs, like, they don't exist together well on this team. They were both out last night against the Houston Rockets. And until Kevin Durant just went full Kevin Durant mode on Orlando at the end of this game, Orlando was all set to win this thing. Their starting lineup last night: Anthony Black, Desmond Bain, Wendell Carter Jr., Tristan Da Silva, and Franz Wagner. Tristan Da Silva, I don't know how many people are paying attention to him this season. Probably not many, unless you're a Magic fan. He's having a good year, and he's kind of on the come up. That lineup makes kind of a lot of sense if Anthony Black is going to be the Anthony Black that I at least watched in the Knicks game and this Magic game, and this Orlando game last night, for anybody who may not have watched it. 36 minutes, 18 points, 7 of 14 from the field, was really good. Da Silva fits in really good. The team makes sense right now. So, Jeff, I don't know, like, do you think this is – give me your temperature check on my take.
I think the temperature – I think the temperature is just right, because there are a lot of – this is what I'll say. People who watch the game and who've been paying attention are noticing what you just said. Uh-huh. It is on notice, is on record, and is something to monitor, along with another team that we're going to focus on in the absence of their star.
Yes.
It's just something fascinating to monitor. Is it addition by subtraction, or is it just a product of early season NBA hoops? There's so many variables at play that I think
it
would take an extended sample size to really hone in on it. But the reality is, save for a season ending injury, you're not going to get that. So you work with what you have now, and based on what we're seeing, I think you can make at least a valid argument as to why they're executing the way they are without Paolo and even without Suggs.
Yeah, I mean, there are three guys who are now, along with Bane, like, you know, they're a lot of their value is with the ball in their hands. I know Jalen Suggs is an incredible defender, but he's also ostensibly the point guard on the team. So, you know, how far do you go if you don't account for the ball being in his hands? I don't know. I'm very curious to see how the situation develops for as long as at least Paolo is out. I know Suggs has kind of been in and out of the lineup. Jeff, I'll turn to you. What is your takeoff take here?
Man, I'm trying to think. I have two. One I feel like isn't as hot, and one I feel like can be way more hotter.
I don't know
which one.
No.
Which one should I go with?
Which one do you think?
Norman Powell is playing right now, not just as an Eastern Conference All-Star, but he's playing like an all-star starter.
So that means we have to go through the top five players in the East. Is that what we're doing now?
I think so.
Okay. So Giannis.
Yep.
I'm hoping you got our guy somewhere.
Oh, yeah, the top three are locked to me.
Giannis, Brunson, and Cade. Okay.
Yes. Yes. I want to say, because well, I don't know if they're doing it by position or whatever.
Well, they are.
Is Powell a guard or a forward?
He's a forward.
Who? Norm is a forward, right?
Norm Powell can't. He's a nut. Look, they had Embiid and Jokic and like Rudy Gobert as like back in the day. So they're it's front court and
back court.
Three front court, back court. I think you could consider, for the purposes of this exercise, let's consider Norm Powell either eligible, either back court or front court. Just it'll make it more interesting. I still think you have four locks because you're not accounting for Donovan Mitchell.
That's why I was like, if Cade is a guard, Brunson's a guard, Mitchell's a guard.
Norman Powell 6'3". That motherfucker.
That's what I just said. Norman Powell 6'3". So, but he's playing the wing. He's playing the wing.
It's Miami Heat voodoo foolishness.
I mean, my hotter take is that there is no Heat culture without Eric Spoelstra. It's more so Spoelstra culture than Heat culture. Spoelstra culture. I'm a believer now. I deny
they should
it.
Put that on the
I'm
court.
A believer. Spoilstribly, like in every language of his ancestors and all of that, bro. Like, that's what it's got to be. But I'm thinking right now, other than them three.
So if we're doing top five players, I think you got an argument. But even then, it's Giannis Brunson, Donovan Mitchell, Cade Cunningham, and Tyrese Maxey. I think Powell would be no higher than sixth. That said,
I think he's playing like one though.
Okay, but who are you putting him over? You have to put him over one of the five I just mentioned.
He's saying, because Jeff is saying he's playing like one, doesn't mean that he's a lock. He's just saying he's playing at a all-star starter level. Pace. But to your point, Jonathan, someone has to get snubbed, and I don't see him finishing above any combination of Brunson, Maxey, or Cade. By the way, Basketball Reference says 98% of Mr. Powell's minutes have been played at the two-guard position.
Yeah, it's a wing. Whatever. I don't care about that.
Well, for purposes of All-Star, it's your guard or your front court player.
And this is why I gave the Powell take. I don't know who was watching when and where and how, but I said I had two takes. One that I felt like we would more so agree on, and another one that could be like an actual take. This one is my actual take. This one is like actual hot take. The other one I've been saying for a minute, and I feel like you can't really refute at this point.
No. I'll say this. I hate to do this. Like, if the Brunson injury is extended, like, let's say Brunson's out for 3 weeks, if we have to sit here in 2 months and have a debate, I don't know. Even then, I don't know.
If he's out 3 weeks, I think then we're looking at a Maxey Cade backcourt. Write it down.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Is there a New York?
Which I don't think he's going to be. So it's kind of moot. Because he's on the road trip. I don't think they hold him out.
The fact that we're talking about Norm Powell, by the way, in this conversation with these people, that's insane.
I mean, he low-key was a snub last year. He low-key was a snub last year. So this isn't too far beyond the pale, you know?
It's not. It's not too far beyond the pale. I like it, and I want to see where it goes, and I want to check in on it a month because... Right now, he is averaging 26 points a game, and that's not the most impressive part. He's shooting 48% from the field and 48% from three. And oh, by the way, 93% from the line on more than 7 attempts per game from the free throw line.
And you know how quickly things can change. This could have been a Josh Giddey conversation a week ago. Now the Bulls' chain is fake. We were 5-0. Now they're 6-6. The chain is fake. Like the diamond tester is looking at you and saying, "Where did you cop this one? Because did you cop this at the play-in? Because this is not top six grade. This is not a top six grade." So I'm just saying, man. Like, and look, Paul George returns tonight.
Well, the dark
George rises. Who knows what's going to happen with the Sixers, celebratory or derogatory? Who knows? Things can turn on their ass in an instant.
Philly's the gift that keeps on giving. that's all I can say about them. All right, we gotta get to the Hawks. So, Sean, give me your hot take.
So first, before we get into a hot take, I just want to say for the record that on an earlier edition of this show, when we were discussing the way too early MVP candidates, I had mentioned I had one Norm Powell as an honorable mention and one Mr. Jonathan Macri might as well have pushed me down a virtual flight.
Oh, stop it.
We're here talking about All-Star. So I just said to that point, so I feel vindicated. Thank you very much, Jeff.
They said if his name was Norman Jenkins and not Norman Powell, you wouldn't have had him as an honorable mention.
See how it is? See that there? Who's they? I want names.
Me?
Yeah, exactly. All right. So my hot take shout out to three teams. And this take is, and Jeff alluded to one of them, but my hot take is Chicago, Minnesota, Milwaukee, and Philadelphia. You are who we thought you were. Milwaukee started 4-1. Everyone's blowing smoke up. Giannis' rear end, MVP, yada, yada, yada. Now they're 8-6. Philadelphia started 4-1. It was like, oh, but wait, watch out, watch out. And now they are 7-5. And the aforementioned Chicago Bulls, who started 5-0, are now 6-6, dropping to 6-6 after the Jazz of Utah had them in double overtime hell last night. Keontae George, game-winning three after shooting tour dates the entire game. This is why we don't overreact after a week or two or three. This is why, the same way how we don't overreact when the Knicks go 2-3, we do not overreact because some team starts 5-0 because they are back. The other hot take that I thought about was saying that the demise, we need to stop treating the Western Conference of the NBA like the fucking SEC, where like
let's go. Oh, like, my God.
I'm here for this. This is good.
Yes. I'm looking at because funny thing. So that was my original take. My original take was they are who we thought they were, right? And when I went to go research the records, I'm sitting there, I'm like, wait a minute. Orlando is at 11th at 7-7.
Yeah.
The Clippers are in 11th at 4-9.
Yeah.
Memphis is 4-10. Golden State is in 7th at 9-6. Like, Dallas, who a lot of people tried to like, and I was like, I'm not an Eastern Conference booster because I'm not rooting for teams in my conference, right? It doesn't matter. It's not the BCS. It's not the college football playoff where a conference thing matters. At the end of the day, someone's going to win this conference, have a chance to play for the title. But I'm sick and tired of it being acting like the Western Conference is full of a bunch of super teams and goon squads and unfuckwittables. And as I've said all the time from my team, there's only one team that I fear in that conference.
Yes.
And one team and one player. You know, the player is the three-time MVP. We know the team is the defending champ. Other than that, I'm not scared of none of these clowns.
I think the perception comes from the fact it's a twofold thing. One, the perception that the three best teams in the league are in the West. And two, it's not even a perception. I think it's a pretty obvious case that the three worst teams are in the East. But to your point, I think the meat and potatoes, that juicy middle of both conferences is far more equal than anyone wants to admit. I think that's where you want to hang your hat on this take.
Absolutely. Because you know what it is? You know what we love to, you know what we see every March and April? Well, if this team was in the East, they'd be in the playoffs. They're in 11th in the West because the West is so good. But I bet you you're not going to hear. Now, granted, again, it's not even Thanksgiving. But like, if this maintains, you're not going to hear any of that. You're not going to hear any of that. It'll be, oh, well, Orlando is 7th. That means if Orlando's 11th, that must mean they're not any good. So I'm just tired of the Western Conference being treated like, you know, the SEC, like, and I have my own issues with the SEC because whatever, but
I think it's fair. And you do have your own issues with the SEC. All right. So on that note, we are going to move on to, our team of the day. We're going to play our first official round of Frill or Fugazi. I don't know if how much you guys were able to watch this game last night. But this is a story of the first 40 minutes of a basketball game and then the last 8 minutes or 9 minutes of a basketball game. So at one point last night, the Phoenix Suns were up by 22 points on the Atlanta Hawks. At one point during the fourth quarter, the Atlanta Hawks went on a 19-0 run and ended up winning this game 124-122. Dylan Brooks had a shot to win it at the very end. And this has prompted a lot of conversation today, which I thought Hardwood Proxism summed up pretty well. Hawks 7-2 without Trey. I understand fans don't want it to be a thing. It absolutely feels like a thing. Jeff, I'm going to ask you to do something unenviable, which is to put yourself in the shoes of an Atlanta Hawks fan. Do you want this to be a thing if you are a Hawks fan?
I think it depends on how attached those Hawks fans are to Trae Young. Because if you love Trae Young and Trae Young is your guy, you don't want this to be a thing. Because when he returns, that means he's going to mess up the flow. Yeah. And they're not going to be as good as they are now. So the question is, do you value the players or do you value winning? You could value both. But if you are a, if you are more of a Trey fan than a Hawks fan, then of course you don't want this to be true. But I feel like if you are a real deal Hawks fan, then there's a couple of things that you're going to consider. One, you probably had these thoughts in your head already. Like the proof is the proof. You probably had these thoughts in your head already, especially when teams who didn't allow him to hide on defenders started to expose him and ruthlessly attack him, that you knew he was a talent. You knew he was a talent, but you didn't know how far you were going to go. Secondly, you cannot, just like Homeboy said on the tweet, you can't deny what you see. You can't, and John is going to give some numbers off of it. You cannot deny in a 9-game sample size, because we go on factors of 10 with the season, right? In a 9-game sample size, how night and day the process has looked. So, I mean, if it's about winning, if you're like winning, especially for a team that could have had Luka. In fact, did have Luka.
They did briefly. Yeah.
And traded him away. And that was a thing until the thing happened in Dallas where they were being compared to each other. They were going to be compared to each other for their whole career. Now the Luka trade to the Lakers kind of puts that on the back burner. It's almost like, yo, you remember that? Because it was so ridiculous. So now you got to ask yourself, if you're a Hawks fan, like, what do you value more? You value winning or do you value winning with Trey?
I think Sean would be the best person to answer this because I do know his favorite nighttime activity is to dip into Hawks space on Twitter. So I'm curious what he has to say. I will just say, as pertains to the 7-2 record, the two losses were to the Cavs with no Garland and no Allen, and to Sean's Toronto Raptors. The wins, they beat the Indiana Pacers by 20. They beat Orlando when Orlando was down really bad by 15. That was also the Magic's fifth game of a 5-game road trip. They beat the Lakers by 20, which prompted J.J. Redick to absolutely go apeshit on his team. And they've been playing much better ever since. They beat the 4-9 Clippers by 3 points. They beat the Kings, who have lost 6 straight now and are 3-11, by 33 points. They beat the Jazz, who are 3-7 in their last 10 games, by 10. And then last night, after they were down 21 in the fourth quarter, they beat the Suns by 2. So, Sean, I'm turning to you. Do you think most Hawks fans, because I know you have had many conversations with these fine folk,
are fan base in the league?
Where do you think they're at today?
So I think a lot of them are closer to the this is a thing than we realize. I always remember being in Philadelphia. Somebody lived in Philadelphia. I was walking down the street just like a month before we moved out to New York. And that was a day. It was a Wednesday. That was a day of the when they traded for DeJounte Murray. And I remember listening to their space, and they were, you know, like, okay, great. You know, now Trey got someone to help defend with it. I still have to say, even then, there are a lot of people that were like, listen, if this doesn't work, we got to start asking questions about Mr. Young.
And that was two years ago.
That was 2020. That trade was 2022.
No.
That trade was June of 2022. Because remember, 3 days later, Kevin Durant became available and everyone was making the jokes like, oh, you traded all your stuff and then you could have had Kevin Durant.
Whatever. Oh, yeah. No. And
so I think there's a number of people in the fan base that are like, they like Trey, but they're like, I don't know if we could win with him being our number one guy. And what I've said, what Jeff has said, a lot of people in Atlanta have said, like, this year, if it don't work out this year, it's what are we doing here? And this actually reminds me of there was a time period where the Wall and Beal Wizards, where Wall was out for an extended period of time, and the Wizards kept playing really good basketball, and that's hashtag everybody eats. And then the undercurrent was that when John Wall comes back, he's gonna screw all this up. Like, it's not an undercurrent. Like, Anyone who pays attention to the association on a nightly basis is going to say to themselves, is this dude going to borrow a phrase from LeBron James, are you going to fit in or fit out?
It's funny you mention everybody eating because I was trying to dig into the numbers on this team this morning. And what I expected to find is that this was going to be a rousing ovation that would be demanded for Jalen Johnson, who is playing awesome. He's averaging, a whole bunch of points a game, averaging 7.4 assists since Trae Young went down. Good on offs for sure. Good on offs. But the guy that I came away really, really like stunned, not stunned, because we've known this guy has been good. He was the freaking most improved player in the league last year. But the guy I was taken aback by was Dyson Daniels, who is averaging almost as many assists as Jalen Johnson, 7.3 a game since Trae Young went down. Before Trae Young went down, by the way, 3 assists per game. So like a, 100 and something percent jump. I went back and watched all of Dyson Daniels' assists this year, and I'm just going to – I'll cop to it. Like, I wish I could do a Shaq voice. I'm sorry, sir. I was not familiar with your game. Like, his passing creativity, when you combine it with the size and the athleticism and the handle, that's the biggest thing I don't think I realized, is how much his handle allows him with his size to get into the teeth of the defense. And when you have this Hawks team where there's cutters flying into the lane left and right, and he's like jumping and spinning and hitting these guys, like, it's a real offense, even without Trae Young. And I got to tell you, man, like, if Trae Young comes back, Dyson Daniels moves off the ball. Jeff, you're giving me some looks. What are your thoughts here?
Sean reminded me before one of our first episodes, I had said that Trae Young was like number one on my All NBA prove it year. Like, he was on the list of people who have to have a prove it year, not so much that you're an all-star, all NBA caliber player, but that you can make it work with the best team that's been around you since you've been in Atlanta. Yeah. Pound for pound, athleticism, basketball skills, size, all of that. And I think they fit perfectly around him. So what are you going to do? I did not understand that revelation about Dyson Daniels. I'm still trying to compute what you're saying to me right now, because that is dangerous for a team like Atlanta. A bunch of tall, long wings who can dribble, who can shoot, who can pass. That's something of a North Star for offenses and NBA, modern NBA teams this year. So that's something that they built around. But wouldn't it be wild to think that the missing piece would be the piece that you have to omit? That's kind of crazy. And I gotta say, like, now, because of this 7-2 record, and then when you read off the teams, I could see a Hawks fan saying this wasn't necessarily the cream of the crop of the league. So we still need a guy. We still need a 1A type player that's going to be able to lead us. I don't think that the 7-9 is really saying anything. It bodes well that if they can continue that when he returns, then they're going to be a better team than advertised, right? But at the same time, the 7-2 is the 7-2. I you play who's in front of you.
Yeah,
if they were 2-7, we'd be saying something differently. You play who's in front of you, and they're playing way above their pay grades right now. So now you got, like y'all said, it is a thing. It is a thing right now. And now the thing is going to put a spotlight on Trae when he returns. Like, and if this flips when he returns, dog, so there's going to be a lot of narratives. And I don't know if a move would be right or whatever, but there's going to be a lot of narratives out there that's going to be of his own making.
Let's stick on that for a second. By the way, I just put in the chat, so for anybody listening or watching on Twitter or something, I just put in the chat in the YouTube show the link so you could go and watch all of Dyson Daniels' assists for yourself. Seriously, take 5 minutes, watch some of his assists. The kid is out of this world. Trae Young trade possibilities. I looked at the league earlier today. I have 3 teams written down. I mean, so let me just say, for off the bat, like, one of these like problem point guard for problem point guard trades. I just don't see it happening. I don't see a Trae Young for LaMelo Ball. I don't see a Trae Young for Ja Morant. I mean, those are fun to think about. I just like the one team, both teams are going to be asking for extra stuff, and then both teams, and then someone's just going to balk. I came up with three teams so I could at least see the teams like having an internal conversation about making the move. And I'm going to save the most obvious one for last. One is the Raptors. Something built around Emmanuel Quickley. Like, if you're the Raptors, would you swap out Quickley and something for Trae Young to kind of reorient your team around Trae Young?
You know, Trae Young, that's actually Trae Young with B.I. and R.J. could being able, and Scottie
and Barnes. Don't forget
being
about
able
Barnes.
To facilitate. The only thing is, again, it's this one ball, and Lord knows they're fighting over it right now, and it's working for now.
It's going okay.
It's going okay. Toronto. But that would, it would be an upgrade for sure.
I just think they could use the offensive initiation. I agree with you that there's only one ball and that's an issue. And I could see Quickley slotting in alongside Daniels and obviously Jalen Johnson.
He said it the other day. Like, he always, like, he's really good off the ball. which you know, a lot of people in the city where we live bang for him to be a point, the starting point guard, but neither here nor there. It would make sense, and it gives Toronto a quote unquote, I guess, another star or a star, depending on how you look at Scottie Barnes. And it will, honestly, considering where they were like a year ago, where it was like, okay, what are we doing now? You could be like, okay, at that point, I was like, I think I know what we're doing, which is better than I have no idea what we're doing.
I wonder, again, I wonder what Atlanta thinks about that. I wonder what Atlanta would think about a trade with Orlando, which, again, the only trade that I could see making sense for the Hawks would be to get Jalen Suggs, because they're so big already with Risa Shea, and they have two centers, obviously, between Okongwu and Porzingis, and obviously Jalen Johnson. I don't know how, like, you could do a much bigger trade, but I just think something built around Suggs for Young. It feels like that's a trade both teams like look at for a second and be like, that's not where we want to go. Jeff, do you lean one way or the other? If a team, do you think either team would consider that, something like that?
Crazy enough, I don't know if Orlando does that trade.
Interesting.
I don't think Orlando does that trade, because now you're asking the Orlando Magic essentially to outscore teams and do just enough and make up for whatever's going to happen on defense, because the narrative out there, and I don't know if the numbers matched up, I think they did early on, but they might have course corrected, was that they actually got worse on defense than they were last year. That might have been with Suggs out. Right?
They've been watching the Knicks game.
Yeah, they've been defending way better.
They're defending now.
So now you swap that out for Trae Young. I think it's a boom or bust proposition.
Oh, it's absolutely
the best
boom
version
or bust. Yeah.
Is you are relying on the other four. You have one weak point on defense. You're relying on the other four and the reserves to lock up as much as possible. And then you let Trae go out there and facilitate, rack up the assists, stretch the defense with his long range shooting. Like, I could see a world in which Orlando makes it work, but I can also see a more realistic world where they say, we made our Bane trade. We want to see how it is with this group right here. And we don't necessarily want to become the Orlando Grizzlies by flipping Suggs for
interesting
for Young.
I don't know, man. I could talk myself. It's funny. I would still want to trade Paolo in that case.
Oh my God.
I'm just keeping it a buck. How about Jalen Suggs and Dyson Daniels on the same backcourt? That would be fun. Ben Kim Gervey is mentioning Chicago. I mean, I just think with the Giddy thing, I know it has kind of gone sideways, but I think they would want to see how that plays out. The last team, again, I feel bad for even mentioning them, but it's just too obvious in my mind is Sacramento, who is going. Actually, they're not going nowhere at the speed of light. They're going to the top of the lottery at the speed of light. Are they desperate enough to make a move for Trae Young? If I'm Atlanta, I'm figuring I could get Zach LaVine, who could be my starting shooting guard, and I bet would be a hell of a lot more amenable to a, air quotes, reasonable next contract than Trey will. And he slots in as my, he slots into my starting two. And I bet you I could squeeze a future unprotected pick or a couple of swaps or something out of the Kings in that trade. Sean, what do you think? Come on, it's not crazy.
No, it's not. No, it's not crazy. So, all right. So you have. So who are we? So
it's LaVine. Trey. LaVine for Trey, with Sacramento sending at least one juicy-ish. No, not juicy-ish. At least one real, honest to goodness, future unprotected first, future unprotected swaps, something like that.
So then you have, then Dyson is now your point guard.
Dyson, LaVine, Jalen Johnson, Zachary Risacher, and then pick your center. I don't know. LaVine, by the way, he's having the most efficient shooting season of his career right now.
No, yeah.
Like multi-time All-Star, Zach LaVine, most efficient shooting season of his career. He's 30.
No, this is
31, whatever it is.
If I was an Atlanta fan, I'd be very curious to see that trade get done.
As would I, but I'm not an Atlanta fan, which is why we had the conversation we did before.
Yeah. I think that's, I mean, it's funny. Anytime we talk about where said player is going, one of the shortlist always includes the Sacramento Kings every single time.
I didn't even have the heart to include a Kings tweet in our dossier today. Jeff, real quick, who's saying no to that trade?
Probably the Hawks, because it ain't going to be the Kings.
Really?
The Kings are saying yes. Like, who do you want?
The Kings are like, we could get Trae Young.
We're going to get Trae Young and figure it out later. Maybe the Hawks. I'd say the Hawks might say no.
You know why I disagree with you, Jeff? Awesome. Because why? In Sacramento, you know who they're all in on now? It's Russ, baby.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Dude, I saw that. He's the best player on their team all of a sudden.
Which means you, if your best player is someone who's shooting 44% from the field as a guard.
Come on, have mercy.
I'm trying to have mercy for the Sacramento Kings fans because I always say deserving got nothing to do with it, but good God, like poor people.
All right, we're running low on time, so I don't have time to put up nearly as much of the social stuff that I wanted to go through today. That's my bad. But real quick, before we get out of here, I mentioned this to you, Sean, earlier today. Jeff, I don't know if you caught this. AD on the sideline wearing a Green Bay Packers Jordan Love jersey. He's going to be out, by the way, for another 7 to 10 days. So this is Mavs fans for life. I'm assuming that's what MFFL stands for, right? Yeah. AD, what the fuck are we doing, man? Jeff, what do you think we're doing?
I must have been in the group chat with Kat. You remember when he was at the Sixers game with the Eagles jersey?
Oh, I do.
What the hell is going on here? I'm like, damn, is this what I had to sacrifice to have a good Knicks team, to have everybody who's a fan of everyone else in the NFC East to is run by the Eagles fans? Like, that was hilarious. And I remember he was wearing like an Eagles rugby shirt. And then in the second half, he changed it and said that it was the reason was hilarious, like almost like he got hot or something that. He wanted to change it. I was like, yo, they was on your ass, bro, because even the Sixers fans were like, everybody was like, oh, okay. But, you know, he was like, yo, I'm going to rep. I'm not going to wear no. The Eagles are my team. We in Philly. I'm going to let them know.
I respect
it. The Knicks are going to bust y'all ass. And I'm still an Eagles fan. So y'all can boo if y'all want. I'm one of y'all. So it was just, as somebody who's a New York sports fan, I was like, what the hell? But I thought it was a funny reverse troll. On the Knicks fans and a troll on the Sixers fans at the same time.
But
and I know he was just like, yo, we in Philly. I'm rocking my team's shirt.
But this, that, I don't think that compares to the AD. This AD thing is just like, man,
If it was a markup Micah Parsons jersey, I would have been like, whoa.
Yo,
Jordan Love is one thing. Micah Parsons would have been, what are we doing? That's what I would say. Green Bay and Dallas ain't no historic rivalry.
It is historic rivalry.
Listen.
Ice Bowl. Yeah. They played in the playoffs a couple times. 90s. Green Bay, Dallas.
Far forsaken.
There's some smoke under there.
All right, last one before we get out of here. I couldn't tell if this was serious, but I think it was. This is from Mavs Muse. Shout out to Mavs Muse. I'm sure you do a wonderful job. The Mavs would be 12-2 if they won all of their clutch games this season. That would be the second best record in the entire league, all while dealing with these injuries. This team has no ceiling. I got to give this the award for the most delusional take, tweet, stance, whatever, of the year.
If ifs were fifths, we'd all be drunk.
And Mavs Muse must be off of all types of top shelf liquor, because
in the New York metropolitan area, as I look to see the Mavs record is 4-10.
Yes,
in the New York metropolitan area, we're familiar with a phrase by one William Parcells, and he says, "You are what your record says you are." I don't give a damn, but if we could have did this and if we did that. No. You're 4-10 for a reason.
You know what? You know what helps in clutch games? Is having a point guard.
Oh, so making Cooper Flag a point guard is it the but then again, this is the same man who tried to make Giannis a point guard. So we move.
And we move on to the rest of our day, because we're done here. This has been another episode of NBA Takedown, a shorter than usual episode. Apologies for that. We will be back on Wednesday with more fun and games. Jeff, last word before we get out of here.
Thank y'all for watching. I don't know what the hell happened with the live or whatever the case may
I'll
be.
Figure
but
it out.
We're just gonna act like we Nothing was happened. On and y'all just got y'all got caught our blooper reel. But thank you so much for tapping in. This is fun as always, man. I love talking the league with John and Sean and with all of y'all. So continue to like spread the word of NBA Takedown. You like what you hear. Tell y'all friends, share the link and subscribe, because we got a lot more where that came from.
Giddy up, baby. Here we go. See y'all on Wednesday. Peace out.